I distinctly remember 2004. Only a few weeks before the year ended, the US managed to find Saddam Hussein in a hole in the middle of a desert during a war, but to this day we still haven't found those WMDs. We also started off with a massive scientific breakthrough by landing some spacecraft on Mars. Only a few weeks later, we had a breakthrough on the internet when a small website was created that was known as Facebook, which ironically serves as an echo chamber for anti-science movement groups. How ironic. Also, the series finale of Friends would air on the 9th of March, bringing a close to one of the most successful and beloved sitcom TV shows of a generation. Rest in peace, Matthew Perry, you beautiful bastard. This world is a little less funny without you. It's also a great year for music, in particular the rock scene, as new metal was whimpering out, and only a week after the last episode of Friends would air, a single would be released by a fairly unknown band. A little single which would blast its way to the top of the charts in my home country, and it would launch the group into several new ear holes of gooey goodness before they themselves kind of called it a day. This is the story of the song called Black Betty and the Australian band called Spiderbait, who covered this tune in 2004. Now, I'll forgive you for not knowing who Spiderbait is. After all, you had to have grown up in Australia during the 90s to have really heard of this group, who were somewhat local heroes. According to their website, the band are from a small town in New South Wales called Finlay and drew inspiration from bands like Slayer and the Bangles. F*** me, what a mashup of songs, am I right? The band themselves had a string of hits during the 90s, from songs like Buy Me a Pony, which achieved first place on Triple J's Hottest 100 Songs in 1996. Another great tune was Calypso, and it is just pure chaos with a transition like this one. How can you not mosh to it? Also, in the year 2000, the band would receive an award for Best Cover Artwork for their single Glockenpop. I guess it's still better than Iron Maiden's Dance of Death artwork. I suppose now we know where they drew the inspiration from. In 2003, they would record tracks for their upcoming 6th album and decided to choose a cover of the song Black Betty and add the high-energy Spiderbait flair to this tune. According to the band, Cram wanted to do 3 drum solos in the song, but they voted against him. But if you have heard this highly intensive version, then you will already know it is more powerful kicks than a mule hopped up by rocket fuel. Probably a good thing, as it might have been a bit overboard. So before we are talking about the past, let's move this episode forward by talking about the past. Black Betty, bam, bam. Oh, Black Betty. So I've mentioned that Black Betty was a cover song, and the original piece goes way back. In fact, the song has roots that are believed to have date at least as far back into the 19th century as a possible work song. The song's lyrics are, well, how can I say this without causing a stir? A girl of a specific profile who has a baby that is crazy and the singer knows it's not his child. Yeah, traditional songs didn't beat around the bush, and they were very direct with what they had to say. Because of this, the song has not been received well in recent times, drawing ire to racial tensions. But I don't think it was intended for racial division. If you look back a little further around this time, a Black Betty used to refer to a bottle of whiskey around about this era, so it's possible that this song has a bit of a reference to drinking. A quick post-edit note here, but Black Betty could refer to a whip. However, it could also refer to a 17th or 18th century musket, a woman, a penitentiary wagon, or many other things. It's very debatable, but clearly one of those songs that has meaning that has changed over time, and no one is really wrong about what it means.
Look a look yonder, look a look yonder.
The earliest versions of Black Betty is perhaps most famously credited to early blues singer Hedy William Leadbetter, more famously known as Leadbelly, who recorded the song back in 1939 for his album, oh yeah, that one. Leadbelly and his music is mostly recognisable by his song Where Did You Sleep Last Night, which also is called In the Pines, and was famously covered by Nirvana during their MTV Unplugged performance. But what is more intriguing is how he got his name. Depending on the source, both stories are similar, with Leadbelly being sent to prison for murder and either being stabbed in the stomach or in the neck. In either scenario, the outcome was that he took this weapon out of himself and proceeded to beat the living shit out of his attacker, and nearly killing his assailant in the process. It's most likely he was stabbed in the neck, as he often hid this section with handkerchiefs or suits. Still, Leadbelly's version of Black Betty wasn't the first recorded version. That title would go to James Ironhead Baker, and his version was recorded when he was serving time as a prisoner on the chain gang.
Oh Lord, Black Betty. Oh Lordy, Black Betty.
Yep. The first ever recording of Black Betty's song was recorded as a work song in use. Seems a bit odd in hindsight, but we can't change what has come to pass. So now we know the history of the song, let's move on to the cover version. Ooh, subversions of expectations met. And we aren't even done with the history of this song yet, because this isn't even the first time Black Betty was covered and met success. In fact, this version might just be the most successful version of the song, Spiderbait included. This rendition of Black Betty was recorded by Ram Jam and released in 1977 for their one of two albums. The song was actually recorded by the band members' former band Starstruck and received a lot of success locally, but when they released it under their new band Ram Jam, it would go to higher positions in the charts. In fact, this song copped a lot of flack back in the day due to the ongoing civil rights movement and subject matter being sung by, well, some white men. I bet that's changed over time. I guess it might have been to a degree, because the band didn't do anything noteworthy after this hit, and that might have something to do with making your first single a cover song and struggling to create an identity for yourself, in a similar vein to Alien Ant Farm's breakthrough of Smooth Criminal. This wouldn't be the only time the song was covered before Spiderbait's version, with Odetta doing a version of the tune in 1964 for her album Odetta Sings of Many Things. Manfred Mann would also do a version of Black Betty in 1968 on his album Mighty Gravy, and Tom Jones would do a version in 2002 on his album Mr. Tom Jones.
Well, the sun done gone.
Okay, I omitted this one for a good reason. Black Betty was also covered by another Australian musician, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, in 1986 for his album Kicking Against the Pricks, which contained all covers of various traditional blues musicians, including Black Betty, but this was a B-side for a song Running Scared from the record. It's also important to state that this cover keeps it very faithful to the Leadbelly version, as it's just Nick Cave singing and stomping or smacking a music box, but I feel it's worth mentioning. So for real this time, let's talk about the Spider-Man version. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. A high-octane sounding song needs a high-octane fuel clip. It's almost like the local gym rat who always claims he isn't on the gear, but you know he didn't get those muscles from stuffing his face with Nutri-Grain every morning. Whoever floated the idea of slapping the drummer of the band on the back of a moving vehicle at speed has some big balls. I mean, I'm surprised if it wasn't taken from an episode of Top Gear, to be honest. I know Justin from The Darkness talks about the dangers involved with helicopters while shooting the video clip Love Is Only a Feeling, but I feel like Cram would have been the type of guy who says, "Fuck it, hold my beer." Something leads me to believe it's a green screen, but I hope to God it isn't. As for the song itself, well, I think one of the comments from this video sums it up perfectly when they say, "You know it's going to be a good bar fight when this song starts playing in the background." Banjos may start this song and the guitars certainly amp things up, but when Cram's drumming kicks in, you know you are in for one hell of a power ride.
Nobody snuggles with max power. You strap yourself in and feel the G's.
Like Homer said, you will just feel those G's flying right at you with the whirlwind of the long-headed, bearded warrior slapping those skins at breakneck pace. And it becomes little wonder why in a year where other Aussie rock acts like Jet or the Vines were topping the charts with their infectiously rocking licks, this tune landed square in the number one spot for Australia like a f***ing bomb. I know we loved it. But internationally, the single would be held for release in America until October, where it would eventually peak at number 32 on the Billboard mainstream rock charts. Still impressive for a band of this nature. The track would also find its way on several movies and TV shows such as Malcolm in the Middle, Harley Quinn, Birds of Prey, Without a Paddle, and The Hitman's Bodyguard. It would even be used on the Need for Speed video game franchise on their Underground 2 game soundtrack. So here, Spiderbait were with a yet another number one hit in Australian charts. Hey, another trophy to add to the mantle.
This is going straight to the pool room.
And their album Tonight Alright would subsequently drop and make a splash. As their song was being used in movies and TV shows, the band kinda did nothing with this newfound momentum. It's rather odd because they never officially stopped touring, but they never did anything too big like their own tour, let alone outside of Australia. Or at least that's what I can surmise looking over their history of concerts on Setlist FM websites. Graham would also give a special appearance for the 2005 Wave Aid, alongside other notable Australian musicians such as Bernard Fanning from Powderfinger, Chris Trenny from The Living End, Nick Chester from Jet, David Lane from UMI, and a few members from Dallas Crane in a one-off supergroup named The Rights, doing a cover of the Easy Beat song Evie Parts 1, 2, and 3, of which the band took their name from the lead singer Stevie Wright. And it is an amazing song if you haven't heard it, both the cover version and the original. Fun fact for you out there who have made it this far, but another member of the Easy Beats was George Young, who was the older brother of AC/DC's Angus and Malcolm Young, and the main reason that they got into music. Perhaps sensing a time for change or maybe wanting to stretch his legs a bit, Cram would go out and eventually make an appearance on the Australian music quiz show Spicks and Specks alongside Tina Arena for a special episode based on the 90s. Good choice there, having been part of the scene after all. Cram would also start his own solo album a few years after the success of the single, which would drop in 2009 and was called Mixtape. It even spawned a few singles such as Burning Sands, which appeared in not one but two back-to-back episodes of Suits. Still, the band would continue down the path of periodically touring the local circuits over the coming years before releasing their long-anticipated follow-up album in 2013. A self-titled record, and it's pretty damn good. Well worth a playthrough for any fan of the band as it taps into that late 90s electronic rock and brashy thrashy style that they have been known for over the years. But this is where the story of our local heroes somewhat trails off into the sunset like a cowboy in one of those western films. Their last release was a compilation album that dropped in 2022 called Songs in the Key of J, which takes its name from Janet and features songs she sung vocals to. If you are interested, I covered this album on an episode of 5 Minute Reviews, so check this out after this episode. As for what the band are doing now, well, according to their website, as of writing this script, they have two shows planned in February, but nothing else. And this is the enigma of the band. They can turn up anywhere and just do some spontaneous gig that causes you to blow your load. As for fellow Australians, I am curious to hear your story if you have seen this band live. Let me know in the comments section what you thought of them. Did you love it or hate it? Also, thank you for watching this episode of Retro Review, and maybe give this band a chance if you haven't heard of them. They might just be something that you are looking for. As for the song itself, give it 10 more years and some other group full of white guys will likely pay homage to the tune by doing a hard rock cover of it, because it bangs. Only this time, we might just see the rise of that cancel culture hype and clickbait headlines more louder than the song itself, like they tried to do back in the 70s. Will it be justified, malicious, or just another moment of the woke culture? Who knows? Only the future can tell us. But I doubt this is the last time we'll hear of this song.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go into the other room and sing Melissa Manchester's Don't Cry Out Loud.
Yeah, stop it, stop it. Nope, nope, can't afford it.
Well, what can we afford?
Black Betty by Ram Jam. Whoa, Black Betty, bam-a-lamb. Whoa, Black Betty, bam-a-lamb. Black Betty had a child.
If you've enjoyed this content, make sure to smash that like button, subscribe to us, and stay notified for future music-related content, because it keeps our manager happy at the end of the day. We are also on Discord, Instagram, Facebook, and all those other social platforms if you want to check us out. As always, people, you have a great day, and stay spicy.